Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. I'm reporter Reeve Hamilton here with editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
You didn't say what week it is, Reeve.
Well, it's the second week of April. I was getting to that. That was going to be a surprise at the end.
Was that going to be? Okay. Spoiler alert?
Yeah.
All right. Don't listen to this part of the podcast. Yes. Hello, Reeve.
Yeah. Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
You don't have anything to say?
Not a thing.
And reporter Morgan Smith is joining us.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Yeah.
I think you actually are going to make this a lot better, I have a feeling.
Right. Well, that's why we invited
Philpott.
You. We've kicked Philpott off for 1 week just to see how it goes.
That's right.
And this week we'll be talking about campus carry, which we've discussed before, and we're going to talk about whether or not it is dead this session. We're going to talk about the Lloyd Doggett Amendment or the Save Our Schools Amendment, depending on your persuasion.
Or the Anti-Texas Amendment.
Yes.
Or the thank God we have money for the post.
It says more names than the guy on the poster at the post office.
Yeah, I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm still wondering.
When I started the sentence, I didn't know what the end was.
Well, then at the end, we'll just check in with Ross to see where he was going with that.
Have we found any money yet?
On the budget.
Found the end of the sentence.
Redistricting and the other sort of greatest hits of the Tribcast. So we'll start with my topic, I guess, which is guns on campus. And basically, it is stuck. In the Senate. It was expected to breeze through this session, and it has hit a roadblock.
It did not get a 21-gun salute.
Oh, very good. Right.
How bad does legislation have to be proposed by a Republican not to pass this time?
Not that bad. I mean, you know, if you get a little bit of noise in the Senate, you know, the Senate's still sort of competitive. You know, they've got 101 Republicans in the House, but the Senate, they don't have an automatic two-thirds, so they actually have to ask. And on this one, they got a yes, and then they got a no, right? I mean,
well, what happened, Wentworth actually brought it to the floor. It was Senator Jeff Wentworth of San Antonio, who was carrying the bill, brought it to the floor, thinking he had 22 votes because he had 22 commitments. 21 had signed, and then it turns out he had 22. But then two left. That was Senator Eddie Lucio and Senator Mario Gallegos withdrew their support while they were talking about suspending the rules.
What was their problem?
Lucio wanted more time to review an amendment and did not think it was coming up at that point. And Gallegos just decided that he would also take more time.
Well, my understanding was that Lucio's particular objection was he wanted an opt-out for boards of regents.
No.
Is that not right?
That comes in later. What Lucio wanted on last Thursday was he wanted an amendment that exempted universities that had primary or secondary campuses on their campus. And Wentworth said, oh, well, we have something for that. Nichols has an amendment. And Nichols' amendment, what that did is it exempted the campuses of the primary schools and the secondary schools, that are on university campuses.
Right. But not the rest of the campus.
But, yeah, Lucio wanted an amendment that exempted the rest of the campus. And Wentworth wasn't too excited about that. So they withdrew it, and they said they were going to bring it back on Monday. Then the press was all there. And then, after about an hour, Eltife was presiding. He just goes, oh, President's desk is clear. It hadn't come up yet.
Right, but the Gallegos thing I thought was, I heard from my constituents that
yes,
this
and
bill
then,
is,
and then
is
we all
problem.
Checked with them afterwards. Gallegos says he's gone from being a yes to suspend to a no to suspend, a no on the bill, and just sort of a general no. So that means Wentworth only has 21 senators that are possibly willing to support him. 21 will support to suspend. Lucio says he will only vote to suspend if Wentworth accepts an amendment that lets boards of regents vote on whether or not to implement this policy, which
Wendy
is a
Davis
Wendy Davis amendment.
Yeah.
Wentworth has no desire to accept that amendment and does not like it.
They've already put in the bill an opt-out for private colleges, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So Baylor could opt out, Rice could opt out, but UT could not, Texas A&M could not.
Right.
Okay.
So basically, I mean, it's a roadblock for sure, but is it too early? It's going to sit on the intent calendar forever. Do we have to have people monitoring it every day? Or can you
when you say we, you mean we at the Tribune or we royally?
We royally. Yeah.
The royalty of the Tribune.
Yeah.
They have this chart.
People
they've
with
got
crowns.
They've got this green book over in the Senate that's sort of the, you know, it's like the daily tout sheet. And it's got this chart that's in it that you start paying attention to kind of in these situations. If 31 senators are in the building, it takes 21 to suspend. If 29 senators are in the building, it takes 20 to suspend, and it goes all the way down the thing. So part of the game here is if you only have 20 votes to suspend, if your 20 are there and the right two or three people are missing, you can call a vote.
And, of course, this came into play today.
Right.
Because
Michelle Obama,
who
was in the Capitol.
She's the First Lady of the United States. She was coming to San Antonio.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Coming to San Antonio. Senator from San Antonio, Leticia Vanderpute, and Royce West of Dallas wanted to go welcome her to the city, but they're both no votes on-campus carry.
Right.
And so they asked for permission to leave. I asked for an assurance that the bill wouldn't come up. That was not given to them. So they stayed put. And Michelle Obama had to get a new welcoming committee.
So who was her welcoming committee?
That's Mayor Wonderful? Mysteries.
Who
maybe,
was it?
Maybe it'll come back around. Barack Obama's going to be in Texas on the 10th of May to do a fundraising trip.
I hear he is.
Come down here and hit the Texas ATM and then go back. So maybe they can be a welcoming committee later.
Yeah. So they might pull a little funny business to get this bill passed. Is that the point?
It's not. You know, it's not really funny business.
Wait till Kirk Watson has to go take a pee or something, and then they decide to call for a vote.
You wait till somebody gets sick, somebody hits a flat tire, you call a vote. Sure, happens all the time.
And they say people are cynical about politics for no reason. Come on.
So basically, you can't count anything out yet.
But what do you know about why there might have been some objection out of Houston? Do you know what you want to say?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there's the folks in Rodney Ellis's office are telling us that some of the colleges in Houston said that if you put handguns on campus, your insurance for the school goes through the ceiling. We haven't talked to any of the schools yet, but they have, and say that this was one of their objections had the bill come up. The bill hadn't come up, so they haven't made their objection yet. But, you know, apparently there's an insurance cost that the colleges go, you know, if, turns out that if you have a bunch of guns on campus, the insurance companies think there's a higher risk that they'll have to pay somebody for something. So
they don't think there's a higher likelihood that everyone will be protected?
Apparently not.
Communists. This is another instance
of the
Senate acting as the saucer that cools the cup. We have seen this now a couple different times during the session, or at least intimations that the Senate would like to play that role. The Senate is the moderating influence.
Well, it's the stopper.
It's pretty interesting.
It goes back and forth. The House was the stopper last session because it was 76-74, and the Senate would pass anything, 31-0 almost, and it would go over to the House and die if it was going to die. Now it's the other way.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, this bill just may be gone. We don't know, but it may just not happen.
Right.
And I think we all would have predicted at the beginning this bill would have gone through.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to go through without any conditions for anybody. It looked like it was going to go through and nobody could opt out, and that was that, and, you know, go get your 357.
Well, the reason that opt-out for private schools is in there is because it got put in last session, and Wentworth just thought he would bring the same bill up since the Senate passed it sort of without too much difficulty last time around.
He had no problem with that opt-out last time?
No, he has a problem with it, but it was the compromise that they made last time, so he thought he wouldn't mess with what they had passed last time.
Question is half a loaf better than no loaf for Wentworth? Would he rather have the bill amended, or does he really want to stick with the pure essence of his bill?
Well, that's the decision. Unless he can find that perfect time, he might have to consider taking that Davis Amendment, I guess.
The question, too, is whether Wentworth thinks he can get an amended bill back through the House. Right? If you let the universities opt out, does he have the support in the House? And I don't know the answer to that question, but he may think that endangers the bill on the other side.
Right. But for now, the bill has been withdrawn, and its fate remains up in the air. Speaking of withdrawing something else, let's get to the Doggett Amendment, which has been...
Nice transition. You're getting better.
Okay, so how many titles does this thing have?
Three or four. It was one of the casualties of... casualty is the right word, but it's a concession that Democrats made to Republicans to avoid the government shutdown on Friday night. And it was kind of interesting because the continuing resolution was agreed to on Friday night, but the details did not really emerge until yesterday morning because staffers were spent the weekend just building the framework of what this budget was going to look like.
That's their story, at least.
I thought you were going to say partying their brains out.
Because the government was not shutting down.
Trying to figure out the stack of post-it notes that was the deal, right?
Yeah. So Doggett lost this round. It's been a feud between him and Governor Perry since last summer, going on for about 9 months now. Republicans have said this amendment was a political stunt in advance of the election. Democrats say that it's necessary to make sure that the governor and the legislature don't use this money to supplant rather than supplement state funding of schools. But now...
sort of a shot at how they managed the stimulus money.
Right, exactly, in 2009.
Right.
But the thing is here, you know, among the other unlikely outcomes is that the governor and the school teachers are on the same side on this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's $830 million that are coming to Texas in a time when schools need it. But I think that, you know, in the Senate budget, this money's already allocated. So that's interesting. And also, I know that the TEA has basically already counted on having this money come. So,
the gap that we project includes this money already
right.
being spent.
Yeah.
So it's not going to actually solve some of the problem.
Right.
Oh, that stinks.
Brings the House closer to the Senate, but doesn't change the Senate number.
Yeah. And right. then the other thing that hasn't really been talked about with the, you know, you have the original amendment that said, you know, this can't be used to supplant state funding, but it also distributed the funds through the Title I formula, which gives it to schools based on the number of economically disadvantaged kids they have. Without that, the state is going to send it to districts based on enrollment figures. So you're going to see different districts are going to get different amounts of money without this Doggett Amendment intact.
And that's a bad thing or a good thing?
It's just, you know, as districts are maybe looking at the money that they're going to get, it's going to be different.
Change the calculus.
Yeah.
It's a thing to fight about.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
Boy, Lloyd Doggett's become a bit of a punching bag in all this, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, he did put in an amendment that singled out his own state and sort of put them at risk for getting
right,
money.
But he did it for a reason that he thought was important.
Yeah.
Right. He thought that the state was going to take but, the I mean, money if you and take, not use if it you for its purpose.
If you take that stand, it's hard to avoid becoming a punching bag, I
but
think.
But the reason that Perry and the teachers were on the same side is that Doggett put himself in the position of standing between the money
right.
and the
That's
state.
That's a problem.
And the teachers wanted the money for one reason. Perry wanted the money for another reason. Doggett was the guy in the way. They had a common enemy.
And it's really hard to get into all the nuances and explain, you know, in 2009, we used this money to replace state funding, so you actually won't be getting, you'll be getting less money without this amendment. You know, that's really hard. That kind of gets lost through the filter.
Especially when you're cutting jobs left and right.
Right.
You're not going to be like, well, but at least we're making the right political stand.
Right.
I also think, and Ross is the person who said this most effectively, I think, before, convincingly before, that, you know, we seem to only like the strings that we attach. So when the state gives right. money look, downstream look, to local
big federalism bad, little federalism good, right?
And we put strings attached, that's okay. But when Washington gives strings to us, that's not okay. And, you know, it's just that's the governor's call, I guess.
Is that Washington right. when it's your own? It's a Texas congressman.
No, it's right.
Washington.
Washington.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
Washington.
Right. Sure, it's Washington.
Sure.
It happened at the federal level to the state.
I like to think of us all as one big family.
Really? How's that working out?
Yeah, that's just dumb, Reeve. That's just really dumb. There's no family feeling in all this.
So we get $830 million. And what's this?
I think it's $832 million.
Like, I guess, you know,
none of these are intended to be factual statements.
Hashtag shut up, Reeve.
Right. You know, it raises this question about the Senate. You know, they already included this in their budget. They already included, you know, you keep finding these things and you say, here's a pocket of money. And they go, we already counted that. And you start to see how come the Senate budget is bigger than the House budget with the same amount of money? Because they're counting money that they haven't brought in yet.
So how can they do that? What if they pass a budget counting on things like this to happen that don't happen?
Well, if you get to the end of this, if you get to the end of the process, the controller certifies at the end before the governor signs the bill. Says yes, there is enough money here to pay.
Right, so they can't screw around too much.
You remember that? You may not remember, but
I probably don't remember.
I'm certain you don't. Whatever
Carol, he's saying. Carol Strayhorn called foul on the governor.
In
the legislature when she was, you know, I guess this is 4 years ago or 6 years ago.
Six.
Said that
the
legislature had spent more money in the budget than they had available and they needed to fix
maybe
it.
Maybe 05.
And, right, 05. We'll put our fact checkers on it. Anyway, back when Strayhorn was controller, she called him. So at some point in this, Combs is going to have to come in and score the bill and say, we have this much money available, you've spent this much money, we have enough money to cover your budget or we don't. Almost always you do, and they're in close communication along the way. But, you know, if you were to do it today, she would look at the Senate and say, you're over. She would look at the House and say, you're inside.
And it's because the Senate is counting money that they don't have in hand yet.
The Senate's assuming they're going to pass some bills and delay some payments and accelerate some tax collections and some things like that. They're looking for $5 billion. And make the budget fatter than the one that the House passed. And the Senate's going to do that. You know, it looks like they're trying to get their budget out of there by Good Friday.
But it's not. There are people in the House that are also looking for revenue, right? Aren't there? I mean, Harvey Hildebrand was looking at that Robert Duncan list, and he said there were some things that might go through his committee. And
well, they've got three committees. Tom Tan did a story that basically said they've got three House committees: Appropriations, State Affairs, and Ways and Means, that are all kind of scrounging. One of the interesting conversations on the side, we might have talked about this last week, is Jim Pitts going to Larry Taylor right after they passed the budget and saying, if I found $5 billion, would the House Republican caucus be willing to spend it? So there's some question as to whether...
And he didn't say no.
He didn't say no. He said, right, it depends on where the money comes from. And, you know, but there is a sensitivity out there in the House of, you know, even if you have the money available, we're only going to spend so much.
Right. One thing I was wondering, just watching the news this week, and this is tangential, barely on topic, but, you know, I mean, the big news of the week in Texas is that the state is basically burning down, and you have all these wildfires. I thought Kate Galbraith wrote that good story about the Forest Service. You know, how much do these sort of, basically, the Forest Service, we need them to fight these fires. They're facing 34 million.
I bet they're not facing it anymore. They had a big budget cut, and I bet that disappears, you know.
Nothing like a fire to cause the Texas Forest Service's
budget to get reinstated. Right, yeah, exactly.
Right, but I mean, that's exactly, you know, how much do these sort of real world issues, when do they come into play? How do they change?
Well, it plays into the governor's hands. I mean, one of the arguments that he made right after the Japanese tsunami was we ought to keep at least some of the rainy day money for an actual emergency, and everybody sort of laughed.
Rename it the Tsunami Day Fund.
Well, and everybody sort of laughed it off, and he said, well, you know, we had those hurricanes, and, you know, and now we have these fires. So, you know, lend some momentary credence to that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the budget's just going to – I mean, we've talked about the budget now for 3 weeks straight, 4 weeks straight.
Yeah, we're not done.
Months, right. Yeah.
We may not have a budget by the end of the session.
That's
there are
people
actively predicting – you know, your potential ally, Senator Zaffarini, was quoted as saying she thought that we were not going to get a budget passed by the end of the session, right?
Right. Now, you know, there's a big difference to reconcile between the House and the Senate. I mean, you know, there's a real question when they sit down whether the Senate is spending money that basically the House won't let them spend.
Well, what about our other favorite topic, redistricting? Will they have a map done by the end of the session?
Well, you know, we're all kicking up into all of this stuff. You know, here we go. Last week, in last week's episode, they were about to start congressional redistricting, and they started the hearings on that in the House. And this week, they're about to start the first maps on House redistricting, and this is where they're fighting over their own stuff. So this is the part where all 150 House members start looking at each other a little bit funny, you know.
The map is being released today. I'm just looking at an email from Solomon's office while I'm sitting here. The proposed map will be released Wednesday, April 13th. That's today. At 4:30 p.m.
That's now.
And will be available to both the members of the legislature and the public. So apparently there's going to be a map.
So the fight is already underway. So
the map exists.
The Hispanic groups that formed that alliance that presented some congressional maps last week.
And here's some pairings even. There's some pairings listed in here.
Go ahead.
You ready for the pairings? Landrieu, Perry, Chisholm, Hardcastle. The pairings in Dallas are Driver, Burkett, Harper, Brown, Anderson. So as we predicted...
Can you explain what pairings mean?
Freshman Ross, explain.
That's not like wine and cheese.
Hochberg and Vaux are paired.
Pairings are where you draw a map that puts two incumbents in the same district.
Landrieu, Perry, Chisholm, Hardcastle, Flynn, Kane, Ritter, Hamilton, Driver, Burkett, Harper, Brown, Anderson, Hochberg, Vaux, Torres and Scott.
That was all one group, district.
Not a real map.
Why?
I mean, it's got a couple of minority districts that you can't get rid of two minority districts.
Yeah. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. So they'll start this fight. You know, you've got this big area of West Texas that goes roughly from the Panhandle to the Mexican border, from the Oklahoma border to the Mexican border, from I-35 roughly to El Paso County. It has 18 members in it. It has enough people in it for 16 members to drop there. The Dallas County thing we've talked about, you've got 16.
You got 16 seats, but you've got 14 seats worth of population. Yeah, and obviously the two freshmen who ended up on the short end of that are Burkett and Anderson.
Maybe.
Well, this is at least based on the release.
Right. Yeah, how many freshmen were in that list you just ran off?
Well, Kane is a freshman.
Right.
Scott is a freshman. Landrieu, Perry. Anderson, Burkett, those are all freshmen.
Right.
All that effort.
Right.
And the luckiest guy in the whole thing, Hardcastle, who's paired with Chisholm.
Well, and
Dead Man Walking.
Chisholm's already said he's going to leave. Right. You know, so one of the things that happens when you redistrict is you don't have to live in your district that 1 year. You get a bye that 1 year. So if they draw a map, Wendy Davis has said this, that if she is put in a district with another senator, or if they move her district away from her house, like they did to Mike Moncrief 10 years ago, that she'll move. You don't have to, you know, the usual requirement is that you live in your district for a certain amount of time before you stand for election. In a redistricting year, because the lines are fresh, that rule gets suspended, and you get to, you get, you know, ollie ollie all come for you. Get one free move.
I assume with the assumption that you will then move later.
Well, you'll move, yeah, if you win the district, you've got to move into the district, and then the rule starts applying again. But you can look around. I mean, if you're in an urban environment, for example, and there's four districts around. Ben Philpott did a story the last time they did congressional redistricting, yep, where he went and stood on a corner in Austin and said, if I stand here, I'm in Lloyd Doggett's district. And he took one step and he said, now I'm in Mike McCall's district. And he took another step and said, now I'm in Lamar Smith's district.
Right. Ben has a very wide gate, though.
He does. He's got a, yeah.
You wouldn't talk like that if he were here.
Ben
don't
has
you
the
dare
flu.
Talk
yeah,
smack about
he's
Morgan.
Dying in bed right now.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. He's the
You're
poor guy's got
insensitive
the flu.
And incompetent.
So, but the point is,
We don't know if he's dying or where he is.
The point is, we're sort of at that.
Probably made it all up.
We're sort of at this quickening point in the session where they've started redistricting, which is, you know, full set of distraction and a full fight over what the political districts look like and what your personal politics look like, and the budget is coming to a head. As soon as the Senate passes it, we go to conference committee and we start really arguing over that. We still have 24 or 25 of the 28 major sunset bills that are running through the legislature. So it's all, you know, it's about 6 weeks left.
Yeah.
So just don't bother sleeping, basically.
Right.
We won't.
Yeah, and don't leave to use the restroom or see the First Lady. It
right,
sounds
right.
Like, are you,
don't be joining a welcoming committee. Something might happen to you.
Yeah, we're good. We're going to stick around here then, just in case, but we're going to sign off for now. So on behalf of Evan, Ross, Morgan, our producer Todd, and everyone out there with questions and comments that are about to send them to Texas Tribune at podcasts. No, it's what is it? Podcast at TexasTribune.org. I just
send
my,
them to R. Hamilton.
My job is to prove Evan right.
Success.
Well, thanks for listening.